Hey, everybody, it's your friends, Brad and Dave, and we've got a special announcement for you.
A special announcement because there's one day left, just 24 hours left to jump in on the special offer for Comic Lab on Patreon.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that we're putting into that offer. If you sign up right now before Thanksgiving, you're going to get a free download of the How to Make Webcomics ebook, along with a free download of the sequel, the updated version that I wrote called the Webcomics Handbook. Both of those ebooks will be delivered to you after Thanksgiving.
And you'll also get the hour and a half, maybe hour and 40-minute episode, the special Patreon-exclusive Drunk Comic Lab, a delightful little journey with two fellas who's had a little bit too much wine talking about comics, and it is a delight. And then in addition to that, you'll get all the stuff you'll normally get at the $5 level. So you will get each week's show free on the Patreon-exclusive RSS feed that you can plug into any podcast app of your preference. And along with that, you'll get 35 hours of exclusive podcasts that we have recorded just for patrons, including this episode that you were about to hear called Pro Tips.
Yeah, what we wanted to do is we reached back into the archives, and like Dave said, those Pro Tips archive total up to about 35 hours of content. So if you've got a long drive coming up for Thanksgiving, this is the perfect way to make those miles just float right by with listening to Dave and I talk comics on an exclusive show that you haven't heard yet. This is an example of one of those. This goes all the way back to Pro Tips number 8, and we had a ball recording it.
But before you listen, pause the show and go over to patreon.com/comiclab and join us on Patreon at the $5 level. You get the free ebook of How to Make Webcomics, the free ebook of Webcomics Handbook, the Patreon exclusive episode of Drunk Comic Lab, each week's show free, 35 hours of Pro Tips episodes, and you'll be able to submit a show every month to the or question to the show. So this is something you don't want to miss out on. Go over and jump in on patreon.com/comiclab. All right, welcome back to another episode of Pro Tips from Comic Lab. Pro Tips is for our Patreon backers only, as a huge thanks for your direct support of the show. So Bradley, for your pro tip this week, what do you got for us?
Well, this is one that I trot out at comic conventions quite often. And part of the reason I do it is because I really believe in it. And part of the reason I do it is because it's so much fun watching people's faces when I talk about this. And it falls under the heading of dream brainstorming. And that is this. When I'm having a hard time coming up with an idea or wrestling something and I'm feeling stuck creatively, a lot of times I'll try to do one or both of two things. Number one is work on the project just before going to bed. In other words, if I'm writing, I might give it a pause, work on something else, and then come back to writing just before going to bed. And the other thing is, as I'm lying in bed and falling asleep, I'll be kind of in my mind, not out loud because I'd be divorced by now, but in my mind, I'll say, I'm going to brainstorm this idea in my sleep. I'm going to think about ideas for the strip in my sleep, and over and over and over again, like a crazy person. Or just going through maybe like plot points, something to get my brain into this format when it finally gives up the ghost and I drift off into sleep. Here's what to expect. The next morning, it's not as if you wake up with a perfectly formed idea in your head. But what I have found consistently is that when I do sit down to write the next day, all of a sudden things flow a lot more smoothly. Things happen. And I'm a firm believer in the subconscious. And I really do believe that subconsciously I work some of this stuff out. I wish it was just preformed and waiting there. But the good news is on a day following something like this, the writing is so much better than the day before.
So this is an idea that you have advocated for 18, 19 years that I've known you. I don't know how long. I guess I've known you about 18 years, and I've always fascinated by it. I'm not laughing at it at all. I think it's a really interesting idea. And there have been points in my life where if I'm really struggling with, not so much with the gag strip, but if I'm at a fork in the road with my long form story drive, And I could go one way, I could go another way, or sometimes even worse, I don't know which way to go at all. Mm-hmm. I will try a version of what you just described because you've advocated it so much. And I have to say, the next morning you do kind of wake up, even if the idea is not there, the wheels are sort of greased, you know, yeah. Like you wake up in a better spot mentally than if you go to bed stressing. But if you go to bed with sort of laying a positive groundwork of like, no, I am going to solve this problem and I'm going to work on it while I sleep, that kind of thing. In fact, you will love this. The other day, I made a point to tell you about this. I was dreaming and I came up with a comic idea in my dream. And this rarely happens where, have you ever had lucid dreaming where you can control what happens in
yes.
your dream?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
It's rare that it happens for me. It's probably only happened a half dozen times in my life where I can control what's happening in my dream. But I was lucid dreaming and I came up with this cartoon idea in my dream. And I remember in my dream going, oh, wow, I got to tell Brad about this. This is so great that this is happening, that I've come up with a cartoon idea. And it's great. I don't know how I never thought of this idea before. And I said, I'm going to write it down in the morning. I have to remember to write it down. And so I woke up in this morning and immediately reached for a pad of paper to write it down and then went, oh, wait, holy shit, none of this makes sense. It was the most... I had done everything right. So imagine building a beautiful house, right? Uh-huh. But it was all built on sand overlooking a cliff on a beach. So I had constructed this beautiful cartoon idea about how Popeye was a member of the Avengers. Oh. And it all made sense in the dream and the dream joke because Disney had just bought out the rights to Popeye. And so, of course, he was going to be – or not the Avengers. He was going to become a member – you know, it was the Avengers. And then I woke up and I go, what the hell was that nonsense about? Popeye was bought by Disney. What is my brain even thinking? But in the logic of my dream, like, yep, they had made the announcement. Popeye was now a part of the Avengers or was now a part of the Disney family. And so my immediate pitch was a joke about how Popeye was in the Avengers because he was the true hero's journey, didn't know who his parents were, had found a secret power when he had the spinach. Magical guide that brought him in the form of Wimpy. And so like my brain had worked out all the problems in my sleep, except for the central fact that none of it made a lick of sense. And I was like, what the hell is going on?
How did the sea hag fit into all this?
Oh my God. It was, but I remember, I want you to know as a friend, I in the dream and when I woke up, my central push was I got to tell Brad that it worked. I got to tell Brad that I did it. Not only did I guide my thinking and in my dream, but I had lucid dreaming and I could control what I was thinking and doing. And then I woke up and not a lick of it made sense. It was all built on a house of sand.
Well, yeah, but here's the good news. Who owns Popeye? Is it Universal? Fleischer King Studios?
Feature. I think King Features, don't they?
King Features?
Or maybe it's Fleischer. Maybe it is Fleischer Studios.
It is not impossible that at some point Disney does buy that property, and then you're going to be all set. It'll be, Avengers Assemble.
Well, oh, man. Anytime there's a voice, I want to applaud it. I want to encourage that. Oh my God, that's crazy. Well, so here's but to the broader point of that you build a foundation for a joke, here's where I could take it away. I looked at what I had written in the morning, right? And I went, what the hell was I thinking? What is this nonsense? But then I said, well, hold on. Popeye actually does follow the hero's journey, and I could make a cartoon out of that. Ooh. The fact that like six or seven elements of the Popeye story follow the classic hero's journey, you know, the sort of hero with a thousand faces. Yeah. So look for that in the next week or two, ooh, Sheldon, that Popeye will be on a hero's journey.
I can't wait. Well, and Popeye is one of those fascinating characters that he was one of, and we've all either had or known characters like him, that he was just supposed to be there for a week. He was an incidental character, came in, and he was supposed to just disappear and became the central character of the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple times in both comics and in television where that happened, where the incidental walk-on, hi, everybody, my name's Blippity Blop.
Yeah.
And then Blippity Blop gets spun off into his own comic strip. Barney Google, that happened with, remember?
Yeah.
Barney Google with the googly eyes. he was a spin-out of what comic strip was
it? The one with the hillbillies.
The one with the
Snuffy,
horse.
Snuffy Smith?
Yeah. Sorry. Snuffy Smith with the spin out of Barney Google. Yeah. I apologize. And then there was that whole damn thing in Snuffy Smith with that horse, remember, that would be a national sensation in the 20s or 30s. Do you remember that?
Oh, that one I'm drawing a blank on.
That's all right. It's not important. But anyway, so thank you, Brad, because your pro tip for this week benefited me, and if nothing else, made me look into who owns Popeye. So thank you for that.
Well, good. I'm glad I could help. What is your pro tip for the week?
So my pro tip for this week is specifically about how to launch a Kickstarter, or at least one way to try how to launch a Kickstarter. So I have Patreons for Sheldon and Drive, my short form and long form comics. And my short form comic, Sheldon, has launched a Kickstarter this week at newpugbook.com for the new pug book that I'm doing. But what I did was on Monday at 4 p.m., I made an announcement to my Patreon backers that for the next 16 hours, the Kickstarter was only being known to them. The link was only going to Patreon. Mm-hmm. And that there were two special tiers that would time expire at 8 a.m. the next morning that they had access to. And what the tiers got you was, instead of paying $50 for a tier, you would pay $40 and you would get all the things at the $50 tier. Mm. Or you could, at the $115 tier, you would pay $100 and get everything at the $100 tier. Now, you might be saying, well, you don't need to give discounts to Patreon folks, but the profit margins were intentionally built into both of those so that they could, I could swing at still a nice profit for both levels, giving them a discount. It's a nice little encouraging thing to do.
Yeah.
And then what it does by launching at 4 p.m., but then bringing it public at 8 a.m., I then have another 8 hours after I bring it public to make that first 24 hours really launch with a pop.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things on Kickstarter, for example, just this half an hour ago, not that it makes a huge difference, but Kickstarter named it a project we love within, 18 hours of it being launched.
Yeah.
So you do get on their radar more by jumping out of the gate quickly. And also you just buy yourself that mental relaxation of like, okay, I'm going to make my goal because I've already gotten to X amount within the first 18 hours.
Yeah.
So that was a tip that I have tried on the last 3 Kickstarters that I've done, and it has worked out very well. So I would recommend that to you and to everyone on the next Kickstarter that you launch.
So here's a question. How do you make your reward time out? In other words, how, because somebody asked that on the Discord server, and I gave the wrong answer because I didn't understand how you were doing it. So when you have those special Patreon tiers, I'm assuming you're limiting them to a certain number of backers. How do you shut that off after those first, say, 18 hours?
That is a great question. So as far as the technical details of this, the way you used to have to do it was, when the project launched, let's say I would set one of those tiers to a limit of 200 backers, mm-hmm. knowing that it would probably go to 120, but if it got to 200, great. And then at 8 a.m., if 123 people had backed that project, I would then change the total number of backer possibles to 123. Mm-hmm. And that way no one else could get that. It would now be a locked tier.
Locking it in.
Yeah. But now, that was 6 months ago. I just launched the Kickstarter last night at newpugbook.com, in case you were asking, Brad. Mm-hmm. and I just launched it last night. And what Kickstarter has done in the last 6 months is now you can actually limit it not only by a number of backers, but by time. Ooh. So you could say, start it only on this date. So you could start it 15 days into the Kickstarter, or you could say, end it at this date. And so in this case, I ended it on 8 a.m. this morning. So that is a new feature that they've added in. So now it's even better than the way I used to do it, because I used to have to keep an eye on those tiers. So in case somebody dropped out, I'd have to quickly move it down one number.
Right.
But I can't recommend it enough. It's a lovely way to start a Kickstarter. It gets a certain level of excitement for your true super duper duper fans that are like really core audience. And it's a great way to do it. So that's my pro tip for the week.
And newpugbook.com is a example of what we were talking about in last week's pro tips episode, that it's a domain redirect, right?
Yeah. And so because as everyone here knows, if I were to read off my Kickstarter URL right now, it would be kickstarter.com/projects/smallfish, which is the name of my corporation, /pugs-unleashed. And that is just... That's just misery. Like, first of all, no, everyone tuned out within 5 seconds of me starting to say that. And then anyone that was actively trying to write that down, they're lost. There's no way to do it.
Or you could say, well, go to Kickstarter and search pugs. But, you know, and I'm sure a few people will do that. But this is so much better.
A URL redirect. It cost me $7. And now in every format where I'm going to post about this, Facebook, Reddit, Instagram, Twitter, my own sites, it's so much easier just for my own self, my own time to just go newpugbook.com, newpugbook.com, than to type in kickstarter.com/projects/smallfish/pugs-unleashed, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's just the worst. So echoing last week's point, a URL redirect, $7. Go ahead and do it for both your site if you've got a weird name and for your projects. So now tell me, Brad, what is your 101 tip, pro tip this week?
I've got a good 101 tip, and it works if you're working in ink as well as working digitally, and that is to always try to draw big and shrink. It's an old inker's trick, right? It's people that have been working in ink have been doing this for a long time because they know that that tightens up their line. When you're drawing a line across a page, your hand has a certain amount of quiver to it. It's got a certain amount of wiggliness to that line. That's just natural. Nobody, you know, you can use templates and rulers and all this other stuff, but... Unless you're drawing people that exist in a perfectly straight-edged world, at some point you've got to draw an organic line. To take some of that wiggliness out of your line, use the old trick of drawing big and then shrinking. Even when I'm working digitally, I still start much bigger than I know it's going to appear either online or in books, because I still like the tightening effect that that has on my lines. The only thing you've got to be a little bit careful of is that when you're doing this, you can't afford to get too small and too close together with your lines and with your detail, because that's all going to crunch in and get muddy. So you have to kind of hold yourself back a little bit and realize the final product is going to appear much smaller. But I like the effect that shrinking my work has on my line. I think it sharpens everything up an awful lot.
Well, and frankly, any pro tip where we get to talk about the wiggle of your line, I think is great. Because Brad, I always like to talk about the wiggle of your line.
I moved away from quiver because I thought that was too... overly suggestive. And I ended up with wiggle.
Neither of them are great.
So I shouldn't have talked about the jiggle of my hand either, I take it.
Everybody's hand is going to jiggle when you're wiggling your quivering line. Oh, geez. I'm so uncomfortable over here. All right. No, I, you know what? And so to echo Brad's point, you know who else drew big so that to hide the wiggle of his line was a little cartoonist that you may know by the name of Charles M. Schulz.
Yeah.
Have you ever held or seen a Peanuts original, Brad?
I have. I have never held one, but I've seen a couple up close.
Well, for the folks at home, how would you describe their size?
Oh, huge.
Oh my God. I did not expect a one word answer there. That was amazing. I thought you were going to launch into how beautifully big they are. And they're expansive and they're the largest comic strip you've ever seen. And gosh, no one else ever drew to that size. So Brad, how would you describe a Peanuts comic strip?
Real big. David, I would say they're real big.
I didn't want to step on your toes. I thought you were just – I thought I was the hype man in this particular conversation.
Brad, how would you describe Peanuts, the most consequential and groundbreaking comic of the 50s that went on to create a whole generation of comics and inspire a legion of new cartoonists? Brad, how would you describe it?
Pretty good.
Okay, well, that's been Brad Geiger, everybody. Let's go back to Steve for the weather.
Oh. Did I ever tell you about that? I actually had an experience like that.
What?
Back when I was working at the newspaper and doing fables, I interviewed the guy that is inside of the Philly Fanatics mascot costume. And I thought, oh my God, this is going to be so good. This guy's got so many stories. And it was exactly like that. And I was trying to get any kind of story out of him. And I go, you know, what's it like when you go to visit little kids that have cancer down at the hospital? You know, I know you do that a lot. What's that like? And he goes, oh, that's really sad. And just left it there. And I'm like, yeah, it's sad. And what happens when you walk in, the Philly Fanatic? Oh, they get happy. And it was like pulling teeth to get any kind of and here's a guy that, you know, if you ever see the Philly Fanatic, in my mind, probably the number one mascot out of all of them. I mean, the things this guy does physically, he's a master of like pantomime humor in a big green upholstered costume. And I couldn't get more than 5 words out of him.
Well, logic tells you that you don't go into a career where you can hide behind a mask all day if you really want to be introducing masterpiece theater programs. You know, like you're not a talker if you're the Philadelphia Philly.
No, he wasn't. I finally wrapped up the interview after 30 excruciating minutes with him, and he unscrolled his tongue at me and then polished my forehead, and I left.
Mr. Fanatic, one last question. If you could describe the size of the beautiful Peanuts comic strip, how would you describe it?
Huge.
I was trying to get away from that. I was trying to get away from how awful my answer was. I was throwing the Fanatic under the bus, and I still couldn't do it.
Oh, that's all right. No, I love that. Oh my God. I don't even want to do my Pro Tips 101 now. I want to end on that. That was amazing. All right. I will do my Pro Tips 101.
But you know, he did have a wiggly line.
God damn it. That was the whole point of why I asked you what the size was. That was the whole lead in. And you just said huge. Oh, 10 minutes later, well, you know, he did have a wiggly line. Yes, Brad, that's why I asked you. I was trying to set you up 10 minutes ago. Oh, God. Oh, that kills me. Oh, that kills me. This is like you 10 minutes later going, to get to the other side. Oh, that's funny. Oh my gosh. I love you for that response. That was great. All right. So my pro tip 101 this week is specifically for the inkers out there. And this might be a known quantity for a lot of you, but since the 101s are sort of beginner things, I want to talk to you about how to extend the life of your very specific Faber-Castell or Faber-Castell, however the heck you pronounce it, Pitt brush pen. And for those of you who have not tried a Faber-Castell Pitt brush pen, oh boy, do I recommend it. It's archival. The ink is smooth. The tip is fantastic when it lasts. And it is a great pen, the Pitt brush pen from Faber-Castell. Okay, so here is how you extend the life of it. It has a fantastic tip that only lasts a day or two in its perfect point form, because then it kind of gets smushed down. It's made out of felt. And the way that you can fix that, if you still have a lot of ink, but the tip is not what you want it to be anymore, you grab an old set of tweezers, and I keep a set in my cartooning drawer that's all beat up and old, because all you need is to squeeze, and there's videos online that'll show you how to do this. You squeeze the tip out of the pen, and what you'll find when you pull it out, oh, easy, Brad, slow it down over there. Slow it down. Slow it down, Bradley. Bradley, slow it down.
I tried so hard.
God bless America. Now I can't do it. You squeeze the tip and you pull it out. I can't do it now. Ah, dang it. Oh, this is falling apart in our hands.
This is the longest anyway. Pro Tips episode we've ever done.
It's a whole other podcast. So Anyway, you pull the, God damn it, you pull the tip out, and what you'll find...
It's huge.
Please. Oh, what are we, five? All right, so... You, oh, my face, I can feel it. It's beet red right now. Oh. Oh, my God, I can feel the heat on my cheeks. All right, so... When you take it out, you'll notice that they tool it. Oh, God damn it, Bradley, stop it. Because they want the machine to be able to assemble the pen quickly and easily. So they tool the felt so that the same point is recreated on both ends of the felt. Ooh. So that no matter how the machine grabs it, when it puts it in, it's fine. No big deal. If it grabs the left side, great. If it grabs the right side, great. It's fine going in. But that's to your advantage because if you still have ink and the nib is ruined, you grab with the tweezers, you pull it out, flip it around, put it back in, and you have a brand new nib on your Faber-Castell Pitt pen. And I'm not going to say the word tip anymore, and we're done. Done. We're out. We did it.
That we was did it. A very good pro tip.
Jeez. Oh, boy. Okay, well, 25 minutes, we're out. We did it.
Yes.
We did it, Brad. We got through the most giggly pro tips we've ever done.
Bring it in for a landing. We'll see you guys next week.